Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good morning, and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Knight Campbell, your host for The Leading Edge, women pushing boundaries in life, adventure, and leadership. Our topic today is making dreams a reality with Sonny Schroer of Awe Expeditions. Sonny's a Harvard MBA turned full-time mountain athlete and guide. She runs two guiding businesses, one of which predominantly takes all women expeditions up some of the world's highest mountains. She's also set fastest known time records up Aconcagua, almost 23,000 feet, around the Annapurna Circuit in Nepal, trekking and running 136 miles up to 17,000 feet in under 4 days, and all over the Colorado Rockies. Today, I'm particularly excited to dig into how Sonny successfully broke away from what she, quote unquote, should be doing to follow her passion for outdoor adventure and women's empowerment. Good morning, Sonny, and welcome.
Thank you for having me, Knight. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. Well, Sonny, to start out, what should our listeners know about you?
Oh, boy. Well, it seems like you did a wonderful job trying to summarize what I do in a nutshell. I mean, I think the big background here is that, yeah, I'm a Harvard MBA, pursued the traditional career path and kind of did all of the right things for a couple of years and then decided to make a radical change to go and chase my own passions and happiness and left behind the business world in order to go play and try hard in the big mountain environment, which is what I'm still doing today.
I just love that story. Chasing your dreams is inspiring to me. And I imagine for myself and a lot of our listeners, a little unsettling. I'm curious, how did you make that decision to leave a lucrative, safe-ish corporate world where you were thriving to do something that's kind of off the beaten path?
That is a great question. And I'm afraid that the answer probably won't be quite what you expect. As in, it's not that I had this shining light and beacon of saying, oh, you know, I know that I want to be full-time in the mountains, so I'm going to go and do that. No, on the contrary, I was building a career in business, and I always loved being outside and playing in the mountains, but I was very much doing that on the weekends and, you know, putting on my head during the week and working hard, trying to do all the right things. The point where I decided to make a change came when I went into a complete burnout phase at work. And the only reason that I am where I am today is because I literally saw no path forward for me in my traditional field. It's not that, you know, I was necessarily running towards this new life of, you know, playing in the mountains and pursuing what I truly love. It's more that I was running away from the existence that I had built. And now, of course, we always say, you know, you're not supposed to be running away from things. You're supposed to be running towards things. I wish that I had the foresight to build my life around that principle. But in the end, even though I made my change out of necessity rather than out of, you know, constructive motivation at the time, I'm very, very happy with how it all played out.
That's so interesting. And there is no shining light. There's no easy answer to these questions. I think many people have passions and these kind of back pocket dreams of doing something that fulfills them instead of just paying the bills. In hindsight, do you have any, other than seeing that this clearly wasn't the path and you needed something else, any advice for people who are toying with that idea?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I was saying, you know, I was making the change at a point where I was running away rather than running towards. The interesting thing is that while I was still deeply entrenched in my traditional career and still kind of moving forward on that path, I always kept saying to myself, oh, you know, I wish that maybe at some point I could go and take some time off and go travel full time and just live an adventurous life and do all of these things. And it was never a concrete plan. It was always a wish, right? It was always this vague kind of, you know, high-level aspiration that I was never going to start actively working towards. And the reason that I never started actively working towards it is because I immediately dismissed my own self-talk, saying, oh, well, I wish I could do that at some point, but really I'm never going to be able to. You know, there's too much that I need to do. There are too many obligations that I need to fulfill. I have student loans and I want to go and, you know, save up for retirement. And, you know, plus I got all these promotions coming at work and whatever. So I never even opened myself up to the possibility that I might be able to go and make a change, which is the reason that it took me hitting complete rock bottom to actually go and do something about the misalignment that I was feeling between what I was doing all day, every day, and what I truly wanted to do. Now, the big surprise came to me when I did hit rock bottom and I said, okay, I cannot move forward in my traditional path because I'm just so unhappy, so I have to make a change. And guess what? All of a sudden, the I wish I could make a change statement turned into a I have to make a change. And it turned out to be way easier than I thought it was going to be. And of course, it would have been easier even yet if I had made that decision, you know, 6 months or 12 months prior to me actually going into burnout.
Right. I imagine instead of spending time scrolling through possible new jobs on LinkedIn, just start making a plan to make your dreams a reality. Why not?
Exactly.
So to transition a little bit here, this is a women's leadership radio show. You went from high power business consulting to guiding, setting speed records, all unfortunately still very male worlds. It struck me in one article, you talk about the frustration. You're out there crushing these records and men would stop you and ask, you know, where's your boyfriend or where's your guide? Or are you actually out here alone? What advice do you have for women in business dealing with these subtle or sometimes not so subtle misogyny or bias?
You know, that's a rough topic. And I think, unfortunately, we continue to see a lot of second-generation gender bias out there. And what I mean by second-generation is that it's not necessarily overt discrimination or bias, right? But it's just this kind of, yeah, subtle and, you know, subconscious assumption that if you're a woman, you're not there to do certain things or you're not displaying certain traits. I think the best way that we have to deal with that is for all of us, men and women alike, to come together and elevate women in all of the different roles that they play, not just, you know, in the roles they play as caregivers and in the home and as mothers and friends, but as leaders and as athletes and as the people in charge. So I do think that storytelling is a huge, huge part of what will help us overcome that unconscious bias over time. And so, you know, if you're a man, I think, you know, what you're doing is fantastic, which is providing a platform to go and talk about these topics. And if you're a woman, I think it is on all of us to go and step up and just take the opportunity to go and share our own stories and celebrate our successes across the board.
It's a really insightful solution and perhaps a hard one, because I think research shows that women don't typically talk about themselves and often attribute their success to luck or all of the people that helped them along the way, which it would be nice if men did that more often.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I still have to laugh sometimes because you were referring to, you know, me talking about the mountains and saying how people would approach me and say, oh, well, you know, where's your husband? Where's your guide? Yeah, I have experienced that a lot. I still experience it a lot today, even when I'm out there in a professional capacity, guiding and, you know, setting speed records and whatever else. But I find it amusing in a way if it wasn't such a systematic issue as well, right? So on the one hand, I just want to laugh and brush it off. On the other hand, I have to catch myself and say, no, I have a role here in stepping up and sharing stories and rectifying the record. So that's what I try to do. An example of that would be, you know, just recently, two friends of mine, women friends of mine and I, set a speed record in the Grand Canyon, completing the Grand Canyon rim to rim all, which is a 42-mile adventure route with two swims across the Colorado River and whatnot. We became the first women to go and do that route. Well, there were a few articles that were written about that achievement, and, you know, my husband Paul and I live in Kanab, Utah, not far from the Grand Canyon, where we operate a guiding business together. And we had folks from the community come out to, you know, to our guiding business and say, oh, you know, hey, we read about that record in the Grand Canyon. That's fantastic. Congratulations, Paul. And Paul would say, like, wait, no, I didn't set the record. I wasn't even part of that, you know. Why do you assume that it would be me? Just when it was a story about, you know, the two of us. Anyway, so that unfortunately still happens a lot. And, yeah, we all have to work together to go and tell those stories and kind of counteract some of the traditional tendencies, I think, that we as women have to not showcase our achievements.
Right. So this brings me a memory of one of the women I used to fly helicopters with in the Navy. I ran into her at a local airport. She was a flight instructor at the time. And we were just hanging out, catching up. And this midshipman from the Naval Academy, a man, walked up and was clearly trying to impress her and talking about how he was a flight student. He was going to flight school. And she just listened and smiled. And then when he was done with his five-minute soliloquy, she said, well, I've got to go instruct a flight now. Have a great day. And the look on his face was so priceless. I've got to ask, do you have any funny stories like that from your experiences in the mountains?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think one of my favorite ones probably is from this past year on Aconcagua, you know, just before COVID changed the landscape of international travel. I was out in Aconcagua with an all-female team. Actually, I had two teams back-to-back. In January and February, and I had just finished my first expedition with the first team. We had 100% summit rate, had a really great climb, had spent 3 weeks on the mountain. You know, that was my, I think, fifth time to the summit there. And I was headed back into the national park, no, provincial park, actually, down in Aconcagua with my second women's team that I was guiding on what's called the 360 route. We had walked in, it was day one, we were walking in from the road to the first approach camp on kind of the lesser known side of Aconcagua, where the only people who go there are mountaineers. I mean, there is no trekking, there's no hiking, there's no sightseeing. You're only there if you climb the mountain, and if you climb the mountain via this more obscure route. So we had finished our first day's hike, we had set up our tents, and we were starting to make dinner, sat around camp, and, you know, we were eating. There was probably another five or six teams at that same camp, and this one guy comes over, and kind of bearded Italian dude, he looks at us, and he's like, oh, ladies, where are you from? And we're like, well, you know, we're from all over, this and that, and so the conversation starts, and long story short, you know, his question started to go from funny to just completely ridiculous, as in, you know, he wanted to know, wait, so where did you come from today? And we're like, well, we came from the park entrance like everybody else is here. And he's like, yeah, but I mean, what are you here for? I mean, you're not going to climb the mountain, are you? And we're like, what are you we're going to do? Well, but surely you're not going to go to the top, are you? Yeah.
Wow.
Where are you going to sleep? Wait, you're going to sleep in a tent? And I was like, oh, wow, you know, this is just absolutely absurd. Turns out that, of course, you know, he had never been on the mountain before. He had no idea, never done any of this. And then he came over to me privately afterwards and said, well, but so you're the guide. I mean, you haven't been up there before, have you? And I was like, yeah, as a matter of fact, I was just there a couple of days ago. Thank you very much.
Wow. It just seems like it would suck your energy out to have to explain that over and over instead of just focus on all of the other things you need to focus on in the mountains.
You know, partially yes, partially no. I think it really depends on, you know, the day and kind of your own personal form that you're in when an encounter like that happens. Sometimes an encounter like that can actually produce energy. You know, it produces a humorous moment, and it produces an experience for the team to talk about. And as a matter of fact, it was interesting to see, you know, with the women that were on that particular climb, they were all strong young women in their 20s and 30s and came from very diverse backgrounds. And they all bought into the whole idea of climbing as a women's team, but they also pretty much all said, oh, well, you know, we really – I mean, it's nice to have an all-women's team, but we could be doing this probably in a co-ed environment as well, and we don't necessarily need to be climbing just as women. There really isn't that much of a difference between us and the men around us, right? And then that encounter happened, and all of a sudden, you know, all of them were saying, oh, wow, okay. We're starting to really understand now why you started the organization that you started. And, of course, you know, it's then even more maybe not satisfying, that's not the right word, but it's even more important to see how the gender roles evolve on the mountain and how experience starts truly taking over, because later on in the trip, about 2 weeks later, we were on the upper mountain. The weather was quite bad, and we were only going to have a very, very short summit window. There was only us and one other team who was even close to being in position for a summit bid. The other team was all men. And we had one short weather window to go and make a summit possible. But that taking that weather window was going to mean that we would have to move higher on the mountain before the weather window opened. So we were going to have to ascend through a storm in order to be in position for the summit, in order to have a chance to get to the top in good weather. And the men's team that was there was saying, oh, well, you know, the weather is just looking rough and we don't think we're going to move. We're going to wait for good weather to move higher up on the mountain. And I said, well, we can't really do that. I mean, we can, but it's a decision on whether or not we're going to forego the summit. And if we want to try and summit, you know, we, the girls, will go and move through the storm and then be in position to go and actually get to the top in good weather. Well, at the time that I made the decision to take the women's team up to the last camp before the summit in the storm, the men then decided to follow suit after, you know, I had made that call. Guess what? Turns out that those two teams, our teams and the men's team that followed my decision, they were the only teams in that window that was positioned to actually get to the top and have a successful climb. So, you know, being able to see the evolution from men looking at the ladies walking into the park and not being able to believe that they would actually be there to climb the mountain to then, you know, starting to appreciate the contribution that we all can bring on an individual level just based on experience rather than on gender, is an important transition that I think was a big, you know, big learning experience for all of us.
Yeah, that's a great story, and it must have been fulfilling to see that happen. I ask all my guests some form of this question. You're leading all women teams on these expeditions. Do you think that women in general, of course it's different for different people, but in general have unique strengths as leaders?
I like to think so. And I think the term unique is a good term to use, because I mean, that's really what it comes down to. You know, it's not that we have more strengths, it's that we have different strengths. And I think that what sets women apart, at least in the environments that I find myself in, which are, you know, high stress, high pressure, high consequence environments where you have to make decisions based on limited information, which is really all that business is about, right? In those environments, I think women have the unique ability of much more specific and empathetic and intuitive communication than what men typically do. And I think that having that intense type level of communication ends up providing an edge in some circumstances, not in all, but in some it does.
It's, you know, I love that you single out unique and different. Of course, everyone has different strengths, and it doesn't have to be better or less, just different. What's the difference, if any, on an all-women's team? And I see on your website, like, some of your events have mostly women and some men, and then I think in your Utah business, you take out co-ed and co-ed groups regularly. What's the difference on an all-women's team versus mostly women versus co-ed or all-men?
When you have an all-women's team, that, you know, communication element that I just touched on, I think plays a much larger role, and information tends to flow more freely between all members of the team. Once there's men present, I think it depends. You know, if you have teams where there is a small number of men and they're team members, they're part of the expedition rather than in a leadership role managing a number of women, I think that that same flow of communication can still happen, and a lot of the time does. But I think as soon as you know, reach a point that's closer to a balanced, you know, mixed gender team, or you have men in leadership position, I think some of that communication tends to disappear, and that makes it more difficult for the women to be as effective as they can be in another environment. But then, you know, I do think that for us to help close the gender gap and to help reduce that second generation gender bias that we were talking about earlier, I don't think that, you know, we should be pursuing gender segregation or focus on exclusively women's anything, really. I think it's very important to have men be part of the solution, part of the conversation. I just think it's important to, you know, to normalize environments where women are in the lead and not just participants.
That's very interesting to think that as a man in leadership roles where I probably shut down women being as effective as possible. I have to do some reflection on that. You co-lead two enterprises with your husband, so clearly you see value in working with men. I'm curious, what advice do you have for men or women looking to work with men, for men to be better allies, advocates, to make a difference?
Well, the first thing that I would point out is, I think, quite basic, but unfortunately I feel like the conversation is still at that point in society today, which is, men, be aware that we as women still are facing that second generation gender bias. It's not about, as I said, outright discrimination in most places, as much as it is about implicit biases that have been ingrained in us through just our upbringing and, you know, socialization over years and generations. So I think the first and most important element is for men to understand that we are still swimming upstream, and that they have a role, that you have a role to play as our allies. Now, you know, with my husband, Paul, he helps with All Expeditions, which is, you know, my all women's mountaineering organization, but he's really just plugging in a support role there where he's needed. So I wouldn't necessarily say that we co-lead that business. Dreamland Safari Tours, which is our day-to-day, you know, Utah-based backcountry guiding business, which is very much co-ed, that is a business that we co-lead. And it's been very important for us from the start to make it clear to our guests, to our guides, and to our community that it truly is a co-leadership. So we both call ourselves co-owners. We both you know, represent the business towards the community. We actually have had very active conversations about participation in, you know, local community boards, or, you know, who leads certain meetings versus others, to ensure that, you know, we represent ourselves as a team of equal ability, equal authority, and equal participation. However, at the same time, you know, we also debated, okay, should we potentially split the equity in such a way that, you know, Dreamland Safari Tours is a women-led business, for me to have 51% and him 49%, and we decided actively against that because we said, no, we are co-leading this business, and it truly is co-leading. It is an equal partnership, which is why we want to be 50-50. So it's less a question of, you know, economic support or advantage. It is more a question of, you know, deliberate design and actively working together to try and address those implicit gender biases that we all still are subject to.
I love that you put your core values of equity in front of what could be an economic advantage in having a women owned business. That's really cool. I pulled this quote from you from an interview with NBC, and I really love it, and I want to hear your thoughts on it. You said, "I'd love to see more women out there, not because it makes the world of adventure sports better to have more women participate, though it does, but because it makes the world better. I firmly believe that women who get to experience and embrace adventure sports are poised to develop a higher level of self-confidence, that they're more likely to challenge the status quo," can you say the pay gap, "and be strong leaders and female role models for their communities." what does being a stronger leader and challenging the status quo look like to you?
To me, being a strong leader is what we talked about earlier, which is being comfortable with sharing our stories, telling our stories, showing our daughters and sons that women are an equal participant in our social and economic happenings, and being able to create and shape role models that help us over time eliminate that second generation gender bias that you and I have talked about. That to me is really, really important. I think it's, you know, it's not so much about, well, it is about the pay gap, and it is about, you know, the glass ceiling, and it is about all of those things. But to me, what's underlying the pay gap and the glass ceiling and, you know, so many other participation issues when it comes to gender equality and female participation is not systemic or systematic discrimination, but it is a confidence gap, right? It's the whole leaning in question, and it's the whole issue of women not wanting to put themselves in the limelight, women not wanting to go and talk about their achievements the same way that guys will go around and talk about their achievement. You know, women not wanting to go and push hard for that raise and for that promotion and for that leadership role. And the only way for us to change that confidence gap, I think, is for us to normalize women doing bold and daring things and talking about them.
I love that. Normalize women doing bold and daring things and talk about them. If we take one thing away from this conversation, that's a great one. I can't believe we're already coming up on half an hour. These always go way too fast. I want to highlight, because I think you've said it many, many times, and I want to highlight for the listeners, this second generation implicit bias. I think particularly as a man, I think it's easy for us to say, oh, well, we don't discriminate against women anymore. There are laws in place, and we're true. But wash your hands of that and move on. But there really is this more implicit, deeper level bias that has to go for true equity.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And it's one of those things where it's much easier to see it and to observe it if you're in it. If you're not subject to that implicit bias, you have to be really attuned, and you have to be really looking closely to witness it and to be able to put your finger on it. But at the same time, you know, for us who are experiencing it, it's essentially death by a thousand cuts, right? Yeah. Each and every one example and interaction doesn't really matter all that much on its own, but it's not an isolated incident. You know, like these folks coming in and congratulating my husband Paul on the Grand Canyon Run to Rim Alt speed record, which he had no part in. You know, it's just that in and of itself doesn't matter, but the bigger picture, that happening again and again and again, day after day and year after year over decades, that's what matters, and that's what drives that confidence gap that we talked about.
Yeah, death by a thousand cuts. And it's hard to see when you're not in it. So pay attention for all the men listening to this. Sonny, how should listeners get in touch with you if they want to learn more or go on some of your adventures?
I have a website, sonnystrur.com, which my parents tried to make it difficult with my last name, but I believe you're going to have that posted up in the show notes. So Sonny, like sunshine, yeah, and then STROEER.com. You can also find me on Instagram under the same name. And of course, my women's expedition business is called Awe Expeditions. That's AWExpeditions.org. And I'd love to hear from you.
Great. Sonny, as we close, what's one piece of advice you want to leave all the women listeners here with?
Maybe a little bit trite, but I really like the saying, no matter if you think that you can or cannot, you're right. So dream big, stop wishing for things, start making a plan. Don't be like me and wait until you have to run away from something in order to go and go after your dreams. Just think about what you want to do and then go and make it happen.
Thank you. Sunny, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate you sharing your insights and experience with us.
Oh, thank you, Knight, for having me. It's been a pleasure.
All right. That's all for our show today. Thank you again, Sunny, for being our guest. And thank you to all our listeners around the world. Remember, you can always tune into Women Lead Radio shows Mondays at 9 a.m. and Fridays at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. It's been my pleasure to be your host today. I hope this episode inspires you to keep exploring, pushing your boundaries, and leading on the edge.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where life-focused, business-to-business, executive, and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.